Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by Senator Tom Cotton of the great state of Arkansas. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Hugh.
I expect Jim Jordan to be the Speaker of the House by tonight. It might take a ballot or two. What do you expect, and would you applaud that decision by the House Republican Caucus, of which you were once a member?
I would commend the House Republicans for uniting today behind Jim Jordan. First off, Hugh, I do want to say that I remain disappointed at the removal of Kevin McCarthy a couple weeks ago as the Speaker at the hands of a united Democratic caucus and a few Republicans who made an ill-advised decision. Kevin was a strong Speaker. He's one of the very first congressmen I met when I was running for Congress. We've been friends and good allies ever since. I'm glad he's remaining in the Congress. He'll be a positive force for Republicans in the country for many years ahead. That said, given where we are, I do also believe that Jim Jordan will be an outstanding speaker. After Kevin McCarthy, Jim was one of the first congressmen I met when I was running for Congress. He was a close friend and ally 10 years ago in my Senate campaign. He's been a good friend, as has Polly, to Anna and me. I've been in his home and in his district to campaign with him. I know that he has the ability to unite the Republican conference and help attain genuine progress for the American people on all the things that matter to us, whether it's closing our border, cracking down on the illegal immigration crime wave we see, getting inflation under control, getting our debt crisis under control as well. So I do commend the House Republicans for uniting behind Jim Jordan. I believe he'll be the Speaker by nightfall.
Now, I do not know who talked to whom about what and what commitments, if any, were made by the Speaker-designate Jordan. But I did see a lot of national security conservatives, and they're hard to put on the spectrum between the Freedom Caucus and the Main Street Caucus. People like Mike Rogers and Ken Calvert that are concerned first and foremost with America's defense endorsed Jim Jordan yesterday. I thought that was significant and telegraphed to me that the serious national security conservatives are backing Speaker-designate Jordan. Did you read it that way?
Well, Hugh, Jim has always been very strong on defense. Going back to my time in the House 12 years ago, he was advocating for higher defense budgets in the face of the devastating Obama cuts to our military budget. He's always been a strong ally of our friends around the world, like Israel. And I think as Speaker, he will be very strong in national security. And that's why you're seeing our national security leaders in the House, people like Mike Rogers and Ken Calvert, Mike Gallagher, Mike Waltz, uniting behind him.
All right, let me move now to the most pressing issue of the day, the Iran situation. And I call it the Iran-Israel war in aborting, because I believe Iran directed Hamas to do this, and I know there are credible reports of that, and I believe Iran controls everything Hezbollah does. They don't do anything without Iran directive, and Hezbollah has been shelling Israel. What is your assessment of Iran's complicity in the atrocity of 10/7 and on the ongoing attacks from the north and from the south on Israel?
Well, Hugh, that's indisputable. Even Biden administration officials admit that Iran is, as they say, broadly complicit. Hamas is largely a creature of Iran. Certainly, Hamas is a paramilitary and terrorist organization. It gets more than 90% of all of its funding from Iran. It gets training from Iran. It's been taught how to employ, in some cases, even make the missiles that continue to be shot into the heart of Israel now, 10 days after the October 7th attack. So there's no doubt that Iran is, as the administration says, broadly complicit in the sense that you can't breed pit bulls, raise them, feed them, train them, and then let them off their leash and claim no responsibility when they maul a neighbor. But I do believe, as you say, Hugh, that Hamas, as a creature of Iran, would never undertake such a massive, complex, well-planned operation against Israel without Iran's approval and probably Iran's direct involvement in planning and coordinating the mission. I understand why Israel right now is focused on totally destroying Hamas, not just as a terror group, but as a governing entity and social movement. But I don't think there's much question that Iran lays behind Hamas and this attack. And the message that President Biden should be sending to the Ayatollahs and Hezbollah is a clear message that if Hezbollah or Iran opens a second front on Israel, we will lay utter waste, not only to Hezbollah, but to much of what the Ayatollahs hold dear. Only with that kind of clear, unambiguous threat can we hope to deter a broader war in the Middle East.
Do you hold Iran responsible for the safety of the American hostages in Gaza?
Well, not just for the safety of our hostages in Gaza, but also for the now 30 Americans who have been killed in what was not just the worst attack against Jews since the Holocaust, but one of the worst terror attacks against Americans in modern times. Again, the focus right now is properly on the total destruction of Hamas in Gaza, but Iran must pay the price for unleashing Hamas to commit such savage atrocities, not only against Israelis, but against Americans as well. One good place to start is to freeze the $6 billion ransom payment that the president gave to Iran. I'll be going onto the Senate floor later today to seek a unanimous agreement to pass our bill that would freeze that money. We'll see if any Democrats come down and object to it. Another good place to start would be to start enforcing the sanctions against Iranian oil that remain in place, but the Biden administration has not enforced, allowing Iran to enrich itself to the tune of tens of billions of dollars, which, of course, has helped fund this campaign of terror.
Now, Dr. Oren, Ambassador Oren, was being unusually candid with me today. He's very, very candid on issues not related to security policy. But even today, he said, look, there's a discussion in Israel whether or not we're getting support from America via Secretary Blinken and the president's visit tomorrow, or if we're getting a bear hug to stop us from doing what we need to do on the northern border. What do you think it is, Senator?
Yeah, I think that's an apt turn of phrase by Ambassador Oren. You know, President Obama notoriously said we needed daylight between the United States and Israel to force Israel to make hard choices. President Biden seems to have taken to heart the blowback that President Obama got on that daylight comment. So he purports to have no daylight between the United States and Israel. But I think what he's doing is trying to hit so close and close on the claim of no daylight as to bear hug Israel to restrict their freedom of action. Tony Blinken just spent days shuttling around the Middle East, ostensibly to show support for Israel. In reality, I think he's pressuring Israel to do things like open up humanitarian aid into Gaza, when under current conditions, humanitarian aid is just a euphemism for the resupply of Hamas terrorists, or continuing to stress the need for Israel to conduct itself by the laws of war, civilian casualties, and so on and so forth. Look, there's no need to hector Israel about that. Israel goes over and above their duties under the international laws of war to avoid civilian casualties. But by continuing to bang that drum, all he does is suggest that Israel might not conduct itself in such a manner. So as I hear Tony Blinken these last few days continuing to talk about humanitarian aid, the avoidance of civilian casualties, and respect for the law of war, I heard almost nothing from him about the destruction of Hamas, about the suffering not only of those who were killed or who are now taken hostage, but their families and their loved ones who have to get gruesome reports and sometimes even see grisly, heart-wrenching videos of their loved ones. I would have liked to hear a little bit more from Tony Blinken about what the United States is doing to help Israel totally destroy Hamas and also threaten Iran and Hezbollah with opening a second front, rather than his continued overweening concern about getting humanitarian aid into Gaza, which is really just going to resupply Hamas terrorists.
Senator, I have great respect for the head of Shin Bet, who today in Israel stood up and said, the intelligence failure is my fault, and we will deal with it after the war, but it's my fault. Have we had anything like that about Abbey Gate or the invasion of Ukraine from anyone anywhere in the administration?
No, Hugh, we've never had that kind of frank, candid acceptance of responsibility, and I haven't seen that report, but it's not surprising. The Israeli security officials tend to take their responsibilities a bit more seriously and directly than do Americans, because their security situation is much more dangerous than ours. You know, they're a small country surrounded by many antagonistic countries. We're a big country that's far away from our adversaries. I think he's also right that there should be full accounting for how this happened, but it has to occur after the war. When President Roosevelt went to Congress on December 8th, 1941, he didn't wear the hair shirt and beat his breast over the lapse of intelligence at Pearl Harbor. He talked about destroying Imperial Japan completely and utterly. And that's where the focus of the Israeli government is right now, and I'd suggest where it should be.
One more question before I ask you about what I think is the unconstitutional gag order in President Trump, because I assume they taught First Amendment law at Harvard Law. I want to ask you about the issue of President Biden going to Israel. Do you think that's a wise choice by the president?
Well, he would depend in part on what he does there. If he's going to Israel to reiterate what he said in the early days after this attack, complete, unwavering, rock-solid support for Israel, backing Israel as long as it takes. As he always says, he'll back Ukraine in its war against Russian aggression. That'd be a good thing. But if he's going to Israel to do what Tony Blinken has been doing, which is to hector Israel about minimizing civilian casualty when it's Hamas who's using human shields and committing war crimes thereby, or to demand that they allow food and electricity and other things to go into Gaza, which will just be stolen by Hamas and used for them, then no, that's a bad thing. And if he's going to Israel in part to try to delay the ground invasion further, since I presume Israel won't launch any further military operations until the president's back in the United States, that would be a bad thing as well. So it really depends on what he plans to do in Israel. But I have to say, just within the last few days, we've already seen a shift in the administration's tone and posture, along with Democrats in Congress, from rock-solid, unwavering support to the usual hand-wringing and moral equivalence, treating this bloodthirsty, savage terrorist group Hamas in Gaza as somehow equivalent to the Israeli Defense Forces.
I would recommend to the audience that they read Senator Cotton's article from 2 weeks ago, Lessons from the Yom Kippur War. He was applying to Ukraine. They apply to Israel even more. And compliments on that, Senator Cotton. I want to close, though. I assume that you had First Amendment somewhere at Harvard. What do you make of the unprecedented gag order on President Trump by a U.S. District Court judge yesterday?
Well, it's another shocking breach of customs and norms from the gang that claims to be always standing up for our democracy, capital O, capital B, as they put it, again, to impose a gag order, not just on a criminal defendant, not just on a former president, but most importantly, on the leading candidate for the opposition party, is something you would expect to see in Venezuela, not something we expect to see in the United States. Again, gag orders, Hugh, as you know, are usually designed to make sure the defendant can get a fair trial, not to muffle the defendant, especially a defendant who's being targeted by deranged zealots like Jack Smith at the direction of the president's handpicked attorney general. So I suspect that the president will appeal the gag order, and if the judges on the D.C. Circuit are applying the law in any even-handed way, I can't imagine they're going to allow this to stand.
I think it's overbroad. I think it's void for vagueness. I think it's presumptively unconstitutional, but I have seen no First Amendment lawyering by the journalists covering the trial. Senator Cotton, thank you as always for specificity and clarity. I appreciate it. Coming back with Senator John Cornyn. Stay tuned, America.